You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Hello and welcome, and it is time for the conversation that I've been looking forward to the most. We now chat with Brandon Topham, the head of enforcement at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, Marius Ritz, the general manager for Africa at Luno, and Farzam Essani, I'm not sure how to say your surname, Farzam, I'm sorry, the co-founder and CEO of Valar. So for context, Valar and Luno are both cryptocurrency exchanges, and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority are the people that set the rules for what the financial services sort of sector at large are and are not allowed to do. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening. Thank you all for joining. I want to start off, I guess, with a question to Brandon, if I can. The FSCA has put out a couple of announcements here and there, saying that, you know, they're looking at crypto regulation, they're taking commentary and all that type of stuff. Where are we? What is the thinking around how are we going to regulate crypto, and how can we regulate crypto?
I think we need to understand that we probably can't regulate crypto, a crypto asset as such, specifically a crypto asset that doesn't originate in South Africa.
Right.
So, for instance, Bitcoin, where is Bitcoin based?
Nobody knows.
It's very difficult to ever regulate a crypto asset. I think there is going to be opportunity. South African company, and there's a listed company now that's talking about issuing their own crypto assets type of thing to raise finance. You know, that type of thing will probably get regulated by various government bodies in South Africa. So there is an opportunity potentially. But right now, the biggest concern for us is that most South Africans who want to enter into this wonderful world of crypto assets are doing so not often with a South African operator, using foreign-based service providers, and they are getting ripped off.
Mm.
And that's our biggest concern. So our initial area of concentration is going to be on South African players, and we're going to try and encourage South African consumers, if they want to have any level of assurance when they're dealing with this new world of crypto, that they'd rather use a South African provider that has been approved by us as being compliant with certain minimum rules.
Right, and this is part of the reason why I invited both Luno and Valar to this chat, because they're, I think, two of the bigger players in the cryptocurrency exchange game in South Africa. So it's not necessarily, you know, listing of new crypto assets, but rather creating, you know, a centralized exchange within South Africa where we, you know, where various different cryptos can be traded or transacted in, much like they would on, you know, any other exchange. I think the question is really around, I mean, I know that Luno, for example, and Valar both have very, very strict KYC policies in place. Know your customer stuff. They follow the FICA rules. And as far as I can tell, and I guess Marius, correct me if I'm wrong here, but these crypto exchanges are sort of saying, well, if we are going to be regulated, we're going to stick to the rules from the start, whether you expect us to or not. Would there be space for someone, for a particular individual exchange perhaps to be regulated rather than an entire cryptocurrency like Bitcoin?
So what we are envisaging is, yes, a South African-based entity that offers an exchange platform would need to be regulated. So it'd be one entity or two. I mean, for instance, Valar will have their own exchange, I presume. Yeah. And that interacts with other exchanges around the world, they would need to be regulated or registered. So likewise, Luno will probably have their own exchange, and correct me if I'm wrong, they will get a FSB number, and they say we are licensed with their Financial Sector Conduct Authority to operate a crypto exchange.
Right, okay. Any sort of reaction to that, guys?
Yeah. So you did a good job with pronouncing my last name. Well done, Dixie.
Thank you.
It is a funny. So from Vanna's perspective, actually, we fully agree with what Brandon has just said. Basically, what we've seen is there's a couple of points to be made. So first of all, cryptocurrency itself, it doesn't promise any returns. It's very volatile. The price can go up. It can go down. People can make a lot of money. They can lose a lot of money. In that sense, it's like gold. It's a commodity, and, you know, one can take a position, but there are no guarantees. And I think where Brendan and FFPA come in is that there are many players, unfortunately, that are in this industry that is new and kind of mysterious, and they're using it as a means to lure the unsuspecting public in to actually con them and to scam them. Now,
there's a lot of that.
Those players. There's a lot of that. We don't want those players in. The regulators don't want those players in. Nobody wants those players in, whether they're in crypto or not, period. So we very much welcome the FSCA regulating entities like Valour. We've actually, from the very beginning, asked entities like the FSCA, like the SARB, etc., to regulate us. The issue was there has never been a framework within which to regulate us. And so we even asked, should we wait for that? And the response that came from regulators is, there's nothing stopping you. Go ahead, and in time, the regulations will come, and then you can register or be licensed at that time. So we're very much in line with the regulators in this respect.
Okay. And then, Mario, so I'm going to sort of bounce a question off you. If you were to look at this Coinbase recently listed, right? They're offering their clients, I saw over the weekend, 12,500% leverage, right? I mean, that's just insane. So there's huge amounts of rules around how you can do over-the-counter. I know there's a new ODP license type that the FSCA requires for people to make over-the-counter licensing and stuff. Obviously, you guys don't do any of that at all. Where do you think the major risk would be with investing or trading in cryptocurrencies? Is it the actual cryptocurrency and its innate volatility, which is wild, I'll admit? Or is it, you know, when we talk about the people who fall victim to this stuff, it's often either pyramid schemes or insanely leveraged trading platforms?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So people buy cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin for different reasons. So you have more sophisticated investors. So those are the investors that would typically buy gold as a safe haven asset. And they've also started buying Bitcoin into their portfolios, single-digit percentages. Then you get speculators. So it's people betting, taking a bet that the Bitcoin price will go up in the short run, and then through that trying to profit from it. And then you have people with absolutely no clue what cryptocurrency is or what Bitcoin is. They often find out about it through friends, or someone approached them on social media. And that's one of the most common types of scams, where people reach out to you through Telegram or through Instagram. And believe it or not, people then hand over their login details, or they transfer funds to that person's, that stranger's account. And that is the biggest risk at this stage. It's people with no knowledge of this technology, no intention, or before they got approached, they had no intention to buy cryptocurrency. But then they're tricked into buying this. So that's why we also support the FSCA's position. There's been a clear global move to regulate cryptocurrency intermediaries, businesses, exchanges, with a strong focus on the service providers. And that is how most people, potential investors, customers get access to crypto. They come through exchanges, they use their local currencies like the Rand or the US dollar or Euro to buy crypto, and vice versa, to sell and to withdraw funds. So it's very important that these intermediaries, cryptocurrency exchanges, that they've got the capabilities to safeguard customer information, to safeguard customer funds, and that is usually where we see people losing money, trusting
someone else.
Trust someone else, exactly. And then, you know,
because it's usually, oh, I'll trade for you. Look at the returns I'm making, 20% a week.
And it's mind-boggling, because if you think about it, if you walk down the street and there's someone randomly sitting at a table with a book, and they say, "Now give me your money and I will triple it for you," will you take out your cash out of your back pocket and just give that person at the table your money?
You absolutely don't. Not.
So why would you trust a stranger through social media? And it's unfortunately the way it is, and I think scams will always be with us. And I think, you know, there's a big responsibility on our shoulders as cryptocurrency exchanges, as the financial sector as a whole, banks and regulators, to try and weed out the bad actors and the scammers.
And I think also there's this misconception that, you know, if you do transactions on the blockchain or with Bitcoin, that it's completely anonymous. And that's exactly the opposite of what is true. Like, yes, you might not necessarily know who the individual wallet belongs to, but every transaction is recorded for everyone to see forever, right?
Yes, so it's good for investigations, but the tricky part here is if you do that transaction, if you send Bitcoin from your account to someone else, potentially a scammer, there's no way for Luna or any exchange to reverse that transaction.
Yeah.
That transaction is final, and we warn our customers when they reach that stage, before they send cryptocurrency, we warn them that this transaction is irreversible. You cannot reverse this. Are you sure that you want to send Bitcoin to this address, to this people, to this person? So very important. For some industries, like, for example, the travel industry and the airlines, it's important to have that feature that, you know, people cannot request a chargeback. The transaction cannot be reversed, so they're not out of pocket. But unfortunately, people getting scammed.
How do you deal with that problem, right? It's a different kettle of fish. But, I mean, you're quite right. If you go to a hotel and you pay for it on your credit card and it's 1,000 rand for the night and you trash the hotel room and leave, the hotel will charge you whatever the damage was, whether you have the money or not, right? Mm. So I guess there is a sense of personal responsibility on the transactions that you make that one has to take.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Can I come in there?
Sure, yeah.
One of the nice things for combating fraud in this specific area, the companies voluntarily at this point in time complying with the Financial Intelligence Center guidelines, it means that a South African blockchain wallet, we know who the owner is.
Yeah.
But when a guy's open up a blockchain, a wallet in Cyprus, and the money gets transferred to a Cyprus wallet, we have no idea who that money's gone to. And at the moment, I can go to the bank and say, freeze that money in your bank account, because I know it belongs to. And I will be able in the future go to Valo and say, please freeze that wallet, because we know it belongs to. We can only do that with some area of regulation, which at the moment certain companies in South Africa are doing.
Yeah.
And that's why we want to encourage people to use these regulated entities going forward, so that we do give you another slight area of protection for the fraud.
And then maybe a question that is maybe not directed at the right person, Brendan, but in terms of exchange control, I mean, how do you prevent people from using it to siphon money out?
Well, it's not only the Financial Centre Authority that's working on regulations around that. So at the moment, it is a big issue. I think Valo and Luna, etc., they do deal with the Reserve Bank Exchange Control Department all the time now. And rules are being formulated, I think, from their sides to get better control over it. Because it is one of the areas. I was going to mention Anna and Morris was going through the types of users. There is a user at the moment that is using crypto assets to siphon money outside the country. There's no doubt about that. And is, you know, the regulators and the authorities are aware of that. And all these schemes that are happening at the moment, you know, they are being investigated by the exchange control department and the receiver revenue as well.
Yeah, and the hawks, right?
In case of this, of course, by the hawks as well, yeah.
Yeah.
So we know about it, and those little, let's call them back doors, I call them back garages that are double garages that was wide open, in some cases are being going to be closed.
Yeah. Do you envision that, you know, given enough time and development, you know, of, I mean, I think this is an immensely complicated topic and a immensely complicated instrument to try and, you know, find a framework or create a framework to regulate it on. But do you think that in time, a normal FSP like a stockbroker or an asset manager could sort of go to someone like a Luno or a Valar and say, look, I would like to let my, you know, you could be my prime broker when it comes to to crypto brokerage, and I can include that in my client portfolio?
I personally suspect that it's going to probably be a big part of the future. I think the guys in the industry are going to need to use existing FSP knowledge in some cases, and they will be bringing them on board. I do also think that existing FSPs will start to add it as a service. I'll go to one of the players, Valo or whoever, and say, we want to, you know, use your backbone and create a portfolio for our clients. I think that it's going to be a development in the future. No doubt about that.
Oh, that's very
and
exciting.
And the important thing for us, besides, you know, the scam element and the fact that the, you know, for instance, forex trading, it's extremely risky.
Yeah.
Right? But you can't deal with forex trading efficiently without going through an FSP. That gives you the warnings, etc.
Yeah.
And we want the same in this industry. if you want to go into crypto asset investing, for lack of a better word to use, please.
we can call it gambling if you want.
I call it gambling, and gentlemen on this call have criticized me heavily for that word. But okay, if you want to invest in crypto assets, it must come with a health warning. Mm-hmm. So we would like, and the players are quite happy to do so, you know.
Well, much like a CFD, right?
Sorry?
Much like a CFD. I mean, that comes with a big, fancy health warning.
It's all, you know, you got to understand. And even an old lady, you just got a pension paid out, as they decided to tell her crypto asset investor to put all the money into one crypto asset. We expected that going forward, that the organization would say, hang on, whoa, this is not responsible. You can't do that. Just like if you were to go to a stockbroker and say, put all my retirement money into one share on a stock exchange.
The answer is no, we won't do that. You need to do this financial needs analysis and we'll figure out what's right for you.
Correct. And that's what we want people to understand. And there'll be an area, I suppose, where people are in that one class, the speculators and the gamblers, who put in that money, they can do is what they like. But those people that are investing, we need to make sure that they are get some level of non-exploitation.
Right. And is there any sort of support, I guess, that you could use or input that you could use from either Valor or Luno that you would find helpful in your sort of fact-finding mission? Because I'm assuming that's where you still are now, you know, trying to first understand before you build.
Look, this is not a new process. They will tell you that there is an intergovernmental working group on crypto that's been working for probably 2 years. We're just trying to accelerate the process a little bit at the moment because it is grabbing traction around the world and in South Africa. South Africa is no exception. So it's becoming more urgent to put things in place. And both of the bodies, companies represented, have given good inputs already in our notice to the public that we intend to regulate and declare this to be a financial product. And out of interest, the biggest issue is not regulating for us the crypto asset. It's preventing the unintended consequences of a regulation. You know, we don't want to in the process say, all right, that has got to be regulated. But now all of a sudden PayPal needs to be regulated, for instance, and things like that. So the devil is in the detail with something like this. This is what where the process is at the moment. So companies like Adler and Luna have given inputs already, and they know they are free to carry on doing so with us. So we are working quite well with the South African players. And they're not necessarily the problem for us. As I said right at the beginning, our problem is these little organizations that are web-based, that are Facebook-based, that are, you know, on other, and they're based in a country that you can't pronounce the name.
Yeah, and, often.
And they're the ones exploiting people.
And they're using the crypto exchanges to do so. They say, you know, if you go open a crypto wallet, send it the money here, or the Bitcoin to this address, and once it's gone there's no getting it back.
As I said earlier, you transfer the money out of your bank account into another bank account.
Yeah.
A crypto wallet is a bank account. You know, if you want to share your bank account details and or transfer it from your bank account, your crypto wallet to somebody else's crypto wallet, well, then you're being stupid.
Yeah. Farzam, it sounded like you wanted to say something there.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a couple of comments about the questions you had asked about traditional banking and cryptocurrencies. You know, Valor is already in discussions with, you know, more than one bank about offering that brokerage service. Now, the question that these banks have is, you know, what is the regulatory framework? And even though that there's nothing prohibiting any financial institution from entering into cryptocurrency right now, typically, the large financial institutions are waiting for explicit clarity before they enter this space. So, A, that's already happening. B, I think what's really telling is, as you may know, in Nigeria, in February this year, the central bank suddenly said that banks should not be dealing with cryptocurrency exchanges and processing transactions for them, which was a real shame, in my opinion, for that economy. But what's really interesting about that comment is that just as days after that, the vice president of Nigeria commented and he said, quote, cryptocurrencies in the coming years will challenge traditional banking, including reserve banking, in ways that we cannot yet imagine. So we need to be prepared for that seismic shift. So, you know, one thing, and coming to the exchange control comment as well, is that the world is changing, right? 20, 30 years ago, we were not on email, right? We were not even on cell phones, right? And today, it's unthinkable that you don't just, you know, you take out your phone and send an email or call someone anywhere in the world for free. So the world is changing, but, you know, our systems, our government systems, our identities have taken time to kind of catch up. And I think right now we're seeing kind of the rubber hit the road. And when we see an asset class like cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin that can be sent anywhere around the world almost instantaneously when the traditional financial system cannot compete with that, the question is not, like how do we kind of stop this or how do we, you know, prohibit this, which a very small fraction of countries are doing, but it's rather how do we welcome this and use it for the benefit of the population.
And from,
And so I'm hopeful and I'm hoping that, you know, I think, and I've been vocal about this, I think exchange controls are doing a disservice to South Africa. I've been very vocal about that. And what I'm hoping is that we use this as an opportunity to revisit that, not just for crypto, but for our entire banking system, to open up South Africa to the world. You know, we have had to forego a lot of revenue being based in South Africa, and therefore we cannot pay taxes because we've foregone that revenue on that portion. We already do pay taxes.
Right.
But I think it's really important to take this opportunity to seize it. Cryptocurrencies are the future, whether you like it or not. They are a better technology than any sort of money we've ever had. And so we need to put in responsible regulations, seize the opportunity to put South Africa on the map internationally, so that we can start shining, in all aspects of our economy, not just in the cryptocurrency space.
Look, and I think just to echo that, unfortunately we're out of time, but to echo some of those sentiments, right? So South Africa generally has a reputation for being one of the most forward-thinking nations on Earth, right? And I think that, judging from the conversation that we've had this evening, that's absolutely true. We've got there's light at the end of the tunnel. And at the end of the day, we're not saying that we want crypto to replace the stock market or the traditional money system. We just, we're moving towards a space where we're going to sort of include it into that system and use the strengths that it has to offer, which is an exciting time to be alive, I guess. I look forward to the next, I don't know how much longer it's been. I mean, realistic expectations, let's say the next 2 or 3 years, the game, I think, is going to change a little bit for financial services. So thank you very much for your time, gentlemen, and everyone for joining. Brandon, thank you very much to you as well. That's Brandon Topham, the head of enforcement at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, Marius Ritz, the general manager of Luna South Africa, and Farzan Eshani, the co-founder and CEO of Valor.